So after 40-plus years of teaching at Harvard, you've come back to the University of Alabama, and you are giving them all 246 of your awards and prizes, your life's work, and you're funding a fellowship program here. Why?
Let me put it this way. The people at Harvard are wonderful. The people of Massachusetts I like a lot. They're very good people, but they're not my people. This is my home, both as an Alabamian, and my forebears came from Alabama, and also this is the university that really saved me because I was the first to go to college of any person in my family, and I arrived here not terribly well prepared, but I had the kind of teachers, I had the kind of atmosphere and opportunities that really made it possible for me to become not only a professional, but also a professional academic and scholar.
What do you think has changed about the Mobile Delta, which you're working to promote conservation efforts in that area now?
I am particularly this magnificent wilderness area, the Mobile-Tensaw Delta, and the very rich, biologically rich, that is, with many species of plants and animals, Red Hills to the north. And we have noted that that particular section of the United States may well be the biologically richest part of. Well, it certainly is of eastern North America, but square mile by square mile of America as a whole, it's priceless.
Do you think if you were 13 today and you had an iPhone and an Xbox, do you think you'd have been outside looking at ants?
I get your point entirely. There would be a good chance I would be sitting in a semi-darkened room somewhere with three other iPhone and video game fanatics. No, I had the great advantage of not having any place to go except outdoors. And the outdoors in Mobile and the other towns I lived in Alabama were wonderful.
You said in one of your talks, quote, "Our political leaders need at least a modest degree of scientific literacy, which most badly lack today." Why do you think it's so important that politicians have a grounding in science?
Very simple. We live now in an increasingly techno-scientific century where most decisions in most domains of life, from the obvious technological apparatus of our daily lives through the operations and state of our economies, all the way into our religious beliefs and actions we take accordingly are shaped by science and the technological advances that are continuing to grow exponentially. It's an incredible circumstance that virtually no scientists are present, represented in the United States Congress, and that we are in fact being ruled by very good people, but ones that are rooted in primarily in practice. We need a very different balance.
There is a movement right now to promote insects as a food source. I'm actually wondering if you've ever eaten any insects.
Lots of them, scorpions, spiders, insects, prepared as just delicacies. And in the field, I've eaten things like beetle grubs and so on. But the bottom line on all of this is I would rather stay with lobster, shrimp, and leguminous vegetables.
So bugs aren't tops on your list.
They're just too crunchy, that's all.
So I thought it was almost fate that we should be talking today because just yesterday I looked down at my kitchen counter and noticed some ants had come in. And what did I do? I went to the store. I'm almost embarrassed to tell you. I picked up Aunt Bates. Does that make me a horrible person?
Well, yes. No, not really. No. Take a little bit of cake crumb or peanut butter. They really also like bits of tuna. And put it on the kitchen floor and watch until one of the scout ants finds it. And then runs back to the colony, usually a crack in the wall of your house, and summons its nestmates. And out comes the column, and they will then feed on that and so on until it's gone, and they'll then go back. And what you have witnessed is social organization and communication done with chemicals of their own, of a kind so different from human experiences, it could almost be from another planet. So enjoy them. So when you have an ant colony in your house, at least consider having that as your guest superorganism rather than as an enemy.
I can't make any promises there, but I will consider it. You write that ants are excellent to study when you're looking for clues into behavioral ecology and sociobiology. What can we learn from ants?
They're so abundant and they're so advanced in social behavior that you can learn an awful lot about the impact of certain groups on the whole environment and the origin of social behavior and so on. But people they've yielded an awful lot of scientific information from studies. But people always ask me, what can we learn of moral value from the ants? And I'll give you a quick rundown. Nothing. Nothing at all. First of all, ants, and you find in a colony, ordinary ant colony, are all female. Males are just kept for a short while. They're raised for only one purpose, which may be a little inappropriate for full discussion on this program. However, the point is that the colony is female. It's owned and run by the female. And now, I'm an ardent feminist, but I say that's feminism run amok. And there are other certain flaws in the ants. How shall I call it, moral behavior.
Like what?
Well, a lot of people have, whether by accident or on purpose, sort of squashed an ant, and after a while witness other ants coming out and carrying it back to the nest. And they say, gosh, this is battlefield valor. This is, look how altruistic these ants are. Well, I have to tell you, the grim truth. When an ant is killed, and many species, it's eaten. When an ant is injured, it's eaten. When an ant is injured, in some cases, it's not eaten, but it's expected to leave the nest. And it goes out and wanders about until it dies, and therefore doesn't spread whatever disease it has. Once again, let's not start even looking into the possibility of basing future human ethical behavior on what we learned about ants.
When you look back over, say, the last 20, 25 years, and you see species, plant and animal, disappearing all over the planet, it's really easy to get caught up in the doom and gloom. What makes you hopeful?
Because as we are looking at in fine detail in this conference being held, which is focused on big issues like the mass extinction occurring, we can see the technology and practices needed to halt the mass extinction of species on the planet. It's a matter of persuading others, including all those scientifically untrained legislators that we depend on for action. It is possible to mobilize what could prove actually ultimately an economically very profitable enterprise of the effort it's going to take to save species with reserves, with understanding their biology better, with those measures that we know a lot about already of keeping them on this side of extinction.
And if you could say one thing to our leaders here in Alabama, what would it be?
You are the stewards of what now biologists have recognized as one of the richest and most interesting faunas and floras found in the United States or anywhere in North America. And I hope that the savoring of it and the saving of it will, and the use of it and the teaching of it will appeal to you as an important part of government policy.
You're 82 years old. What's the secret to a vibrant and fulfilling life?
Never grew up. Never grew up because I'm a naturalist and I just love going on the outdoors. I can only wish that fate on others.
You know how everybody talks about cockroaches as being able to survive a nuclear bomb? Ants, I was reading in one of your books, also are resistant to radiation. So in an apocalyptic smackdown, who's going to survive?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. There was an experiment run at a laboratory facility on Long Island that actually tested the effects on organisms of short-wave radiation, gamma radiation, over long periods of time, the life of an enclosure, obviously high, secure, protected enclosure, exposed to strontium-90 radiation for just a long, long period of time. Of course, everything died. The plants died eventually. And finally, there were some pretty sick-looking ants crawling around, but they survived. So there's no question which species would come up out of the smoldering ruin if we did something horrific to ourselves and the rest of the planet.
The ants would win.
No question.
Is there anything else that you want to add?
No. It's just I'm glad to be back in my home state because I'm an Alabamian. And just to give advice, if you have anybody that's trying to be pushy by saying that they are a native too. Don't let them do that unless they can prove it, that they are native and just take credit for being from Alabama. Ask them what you call a person who's from Alabama. If they say Alabaman, throw them out. It's Alabamian. I'm an Alabamian.
Great. Well, thanks so much for talking with me today.
My pleasure.